The first annual Indigenous Sovereignty Week was held across Canada from October 25th to 31st. Indigenous Sovereignty Week was conceived of by Defenders of the Land, a cross-Canada network of First Nations in land struggle fighting for Indigenous rights. The week was organized to contribute to building a cross-Canada movement for Indigenous rights, self-determination, and justice that is led by Indigenous communities, but with a broad base of informed support. In Winnipeg, Indigenous Sovereignty Week concluded with a panel discussion called Defenders of the Land, Voices of Resistance, which featured three Aboriginal activists standing up to the tar sands, Manitoba hydro floods and broken promises, and uranium mining in their respective communities. In this segment, we hear excerpts from Mike Mercredi of Fort Chippewa, speaking about the impacts of the tar sands project in his community.
So I'll take you on a little journey of our people's plight and this fight against, I guess, democracy is what I have to call it. And it's a corporocracy, the way our province is run. It's industry-driven, government-funded, funded by industry. Proof of this was last week in court battles with them. And we have taken them to court, and we have used the white system's ways of doing things, and they have failed. So, like the people that were sitting here, we have to go to other means and find other ways. And our elders tell us we're a peaceful people. So find as many means as possible to try and do it in a peaceful way first, because this is how it was done. These are how treaties were signed. A treaty is a peace agreement to live in peace in a land and share it. That's what treaty is. When companies are at war, they sign treaties not to fight anymore. With the First Nations, there was a war that they were fighting. They had Indian extermination programs, residential schools, diseases. This is war of a people, and this is a war that's still going on. And I became a fine instrument of war. I was taught by them how to do these things, and I was good at it. I was taught very well. I learned very fast, and I was very adaptable. How I mean by being an instrument of war was that I used to work for Syncrude Canada, the biggest producer of the tar sands industry in Alberta. I drove their heavy haulers. I sat in their trucks, 400 tons. A truck is about the half the size of this room, but the height of the half the height of here. So 400 tons, that's a million pounds. And these are what they use to move the earth and take tar sands out. So like a story I was gonna tell you about starts in 1922. It starts with our chief sending a letter to the government in Dinac about basically saying where our reserve lands were in our traditional territories and finalizing the treaty that was signed for Treaty 8 in 1899. He sent this letter in early of 1922. They didn't respond to him right away. It took him, I think, 17 to 18 years before they responded back. Several months after the government received this letter, the Mining Act was passed. I question these things like that, because if consultation is law now, what chief was sitting at that table when you passed the Mining Act? Was any of our chiefs sitting at that table? If we're stewards of the land and you're passing these acts on our behalf, where on that line does it say the Athabasca Chippewa First Nations allow you to mine and develop on our territory? It doesn't say that. So already they broke the treaty. So that's where part of our war begins. From there, it took them 66 years to take that rights away from us and make those lands privatized and sold the leases out to industry that not even from this country. BP is one of them. Japan Oil is another. Shell is global. Like I said, you know, these are war that we're happening on. And where I come from is ground zero. So, like I said, I worked for Syncrude Canada 2 years ago. I quit. My hair was probably down to here. I cut it, and I got off that truck, and I went home. And when I quit, I didn't know what I was going to do from there, because I didn't know what my future was going to be like. I didn't know I'd be sitting here, three provinces away, well, two, speaking to people I just met, coming to hear what we have to say. I didn't know that was going to happen, but I'm here. I went home because people were dying. People were literally dying. Every couple of weeks, I've got a phone call, another person sick, infected. Sick with a rare cancer. The rare cancer that they found in my community, as stated by Western science, is that it can only be found in 1 in 100,000 people. There's only 1,200 people in my community. 108 people have died since 1999. 47 cases right now, presently, out of 1,200 of a cancer that can only be found 1 in 100,000. You compare the numbers to a city, we're looking at an epidemic, and that's what we're facing. Rare cancer, meaning it's biological. The pH is break down the DNA system of our body and causes cancer, why it's so rare. So to me, that's biological warfare. The government is allowing this to happen by signing away leases, by giving away applications for them to produce. So they already signed the paper and signed our lives away. I lost an uncle a couple years ago. He died to this cancer. There's no known sicknesses in my family on both sides. They're pretty healthy. Everyone's either died natural or accidental. I buried my auntie last year. Two people in my family became victims of this war. So then I knew from there what I had to do was become a soldier. In another sense, meaning I got to use words as my sword. And hopefully that I can infect other minds too with what's really going on out there and say that, you know, what's happening here is just the start, the tip of the iceberg of this fight. It's not just for the lives of my auntie and myself, but your guys, your children, the ones that are not here yet. These are how our elders teach us. And I went back home, I started working for our First Nations as a traditional environment knowledge specialist, doing interviews with elders, going out on the land, documenting basically our lives that we've lived for thousands of years to archive it. The idea at the time was to archive it so future generations can look at a jump drive and see what the people used to live like. Because if you've seen tar sands, you'd say, how can anybody be living near this thing, around this thing, and working in there not having a conscience? That's what they taught us right out of high school, teaching us to go work in these things and how the world is run and how these things are run. Like I said, they made me an instrument of their war, and I was good at it. So I stopped doing that because I don't want to be the one pulling the trigger on my auntie or my uncle. And that's basically what I had to view it as. So I got off that truck and went home. And from there began my journey against and resisting what they were doing and going out and speaking against it and having every opportunity to say so. And this is where I'm at and what has brought me to. You know, I'd like to thank the gentleman that spoke earlier. I got some very powerful words and I learned a lot of things sitting here, and I hope you did too. I'd like to thank the organizers for bringing me here from far away to come sit and speak with you. I thank them, but to tell you the truth, there's no honor in this. There's no honor in what I do. There's no honor coming to tell you my auntie died because of someone wanting to make money. I don't have an uncle anymore because of tar sands. Where is the honor in that, of telling you what we're going through? There is none. There is no honor in it, but I have to do it. The culture is being lost by us choosing to live the democratic way, by us choosing to live the way of assimilation, colonization. Culture is dying that way. And along with our culture, the environment is going hand in hand. The ecology and the culture of the First Nations people, once these two things disappear, there's four colors that make up the earth of the race of the human people. The culture and the treaties is one of the ways that keep our rights, that we may be able to go out on that land, eat the food, the fish, drink the water, and live and survive. But these rights are being broken and taken away. I can't go in the bush anymore to go eat the moose for fear of arsenic. I can't eat that fish one a week, they said, high contents of mercury. I can't drink the water that fish is swimming in. The trees that are being cut down, there's not many left in the area to use. How long? When you look at the leases that are giving away for this area in the boreal forest, how can anything survive? Let alone people. Moose has got nowhere to go. Fish has got nowhere to swim. And even the water itself is disappearing. That's just the environment and the ecology disappearing along with our culture, hand in hand. If we don't change our attitudes and our minds of where we're going, we're not going to be here very long. And you're all going to agree with me that the way we're going, do you really think we deserve to be here? Do we deserve to treat the earth the way we do now? You can't even walk out on ground. It's all concrete in the cities. And it's only my hopes that the people sitting in this room who hear these things can go out and share them and tell other people. Or else take it upon yourselves to do something about it. Find ways of doing it, because there's always a way. There's always a will. There's always a spirit. One of the ways that we're taught in democracy to live these ways, like I said, it was a lie. I don't believe it anymore. Progress? I've seen their progress promises. They left giant holes in the ground with huge lakes of toxic tailings. They're going to be sitting there for thousands of years until they leak. And our elders have been saying since the 70s that what's going on there is going to sit there for a long time. No one's going to be able to do anything about it. We can't live around it, and they're not going to do anything about it. They're buying their time until they get what they want. They're buying their time to mine everything out while we're sitting there fumbling over little bit of money as they want to throw at us. Five nations in that area, in that region, are fighting amongst themselves. So who owns what or who's doing what? Some even close their doors to their nations because they don't want them to know the deals they have. That industry is worth billions. The government got a $6 billion surplus. Surplus. Not accounting for everything else that's there, for what the industry made itself. They brag about these things. It's in the millions, billions of dollars yearly, what they're pulling out of there. Yet, human violations and human rights are being trampled on. When John was talking about how much they would give for the lives of people that died, how much it's gone up, I was surprised. Because back home, it's the cost of a barrel of oil. 50, 60 bucks a barrel. My auntie's life is worth more than that. My culture is worth more than that. If I can't go out there and live, that culture dies. My infringement, the rights have been infringed upon. That's illegal, okay, according to the Canadian law. And why haven't they been stopped? Our elders have been saying since the 70s that this is wrong, that what they're doing is destroying the land, and it has to stop. Moratorium is a slowdown. I oppose it. I want absolute shutdown. Every day I have to accept the fact that we're facing our own annihilation, to find peace within myself that today may be my last. It's the only humble way I can go about doing it. Because when I look into the future, I don't want to be there. I've seen it. It's scary. And it's not a place I want to be. Which is why I got to live today for today in this moment and enjoy it. You know, like anybody else, I like a good cup of coffee. But you gotta think, what took that coffee to get there? The tree to make that paper cup? The people down in Colombia, picking those coffee beans to get it, fly it up here, to fuel that jet to fly it into this country. People don't think about those things. But now we do. Now we're wondering. Like I said, we're at an important choice in human history. We're at the pinnacle. We cannot advance anymore. What have we done? We went to court. They threw it out because of a technicality. Something to do with not registering in time for it. A technicality on something like that. They had Shell backing them up. A couple of months before that, report released, environmentalists and First Nations terror, maybe terrorists, eco-terrorists. From that to them throwing out this court and technicality, I smell fear. And it's not mine. It's theirs. It's their fear that I smell. Because I have a treaty right. As long as the grass grows, the river flows, sun shines. And they're trying to break all that by tearing up the ground and hopefully stopping the rivers from flowing. 1899, 2009, that treaty's still there and I'm still standing here talking about it. And that's how our people believe. We don't believe for as long as that lease is gonna be up. We don't believe for the projection or the project of how long it's gonna last. That's not what we're talking about. And they don't understand that. They want the deal right now and the money right now. They'll be burnt up in this day and age. $50 million won't last the First Nation that long. Not 50 years. Hell no. Maybe 20. Probably less than that. Probably a lot less than that. And for them, that's lots of money to give the Indians. Too much. They won't even let us control our own funds. You know, and this is neocolonialism at its best, is that form right there. And I understand that. I see it. So when we speak of generations to come. What we're fighting for is our kids. Our kids' kids. There's so much more as to where I want to say to go back onto the tar sands issue to bring you back into another downer, but lifting human spirit and making you feel happy are one of the best things that the gifts I can have to share with you. And I hope I've done that. I hope that out of everything you heard, every tunnel has a light at the end of it. And let's look there and bring our brothers and sisters along with us. What you just heard is the tip of the iceberg of what's going on. Educate yourself on the tar sands of what's going on there. You'll see what I mean. Some scary stuff. I can tell you more, but it's only going to anger me and, you know, carry this conversation on to make you more depressed. Make you feel bad about it, but I want your spirits to be lifted that there is hope. There's hope in the sun, solar energy. There's hope in the wind turbines. Think of these simple things that have been there for thousands of years before we got here. And they'll be here thousands of years after we're gone. Simple. Human. So, hi, hi.
That was Mike Mercredi of Fort Chippewa, speaking in Winnipeg on October 31st, 2009, during Indigenous Sovereignty Week. The two other speakers from the Defenders of the Land Voices of Resistance panel will be broadcast on Black Mask in the coming weeks. For more information about the tar sands, you can visit oilsandstruth.org.